21 Housewives. I am your host, Cammie, and I have with me Natasha Parker regarding her profile on ordainedwomen.org. So, Natasha, would you like to tell us about who you are?
Sure. Let's see. Who am I?
Where do I come from?
I've been a member most of my life. My parents converted to the church when I was about 5 years old. I'm currently a mother of four kiddos and married for almost 20 years, not quite. I think we're coming up on our 19th. Hmm. We start forgetting.
Yes.
And I'm a marriage and family therapist, and I work with mostly members in my practice. And if anybody is familiar with me, it's probably through avenues like my blog, either The Mormon Therapist or Mormon Mental Health or Mormon Stories or some of those places where I've hosted some podcasts.
Yes.
And, spoken to some of the issues that we face in the church through the mental health lens.
And you've been a therapist for how long?
17 years now.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I've really learned a lot from your podcast and from our interchange online, and you've been very, very helpful. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about when you posted your profile on Ordained Women and why.
Okay, I think my profile went up in December of last year.
2013?
Right, yes, okay. 2013, which actually I'm a little bit embarrassed about. I you know how you have things on your to-do lists, mm-hmm. and then they never quite happen. So I had wanted to kind of stand firm with this several months earlier than that, actually. So but I'm glad I did when I did. I think this is a really interesting conversation that's happening within our church at this time. And I think it comes with a lot of history that is complicated and sometimes hard to understand. You know, I guess just giving a little bit of my background in the church. I mean, I was definitely one of those women who was content with my role in the church. Mm-hmm. I was definitely one of those that would probably have said 10 years ago, well, you know, I have a lot of responsibilities as a mother. And, you know, those are kind of the responsibilities that I've been given. And I feel equal to my spouse. And mm-hmm. so I don't necessarily need the ordination of priesthood to feel more equal or anything of that nature. So mm-hmm. I can definitely understand where that comes from, because that's where I come from. I think one of the things that started me thinking even before I really understood the advocacy part of it was just answering some of the questions my own daughter had, like right off the bat, you know, right off the bat as she's 3 or 4 or 5 years old, I'm getting asked questions like, well, why are only the boys, you know, passing the sacrament? Hmm. Why is daddy only the one that's going up and blessing the baby? And just things like, why are there only men sitting up there, mom, instead of other women? It was these types of questions that helped me understand that there were other points of view, that the way I had made sense of things wasn't necessarily how my daughter would make sense of things, or even then, things that I thought I had made sense of were starting to be questioned, and I had to really think through these things as well. Mm. The second area of my life that really became more prominent was the many women that I worked with in the church from a professional standpoint, and many of their thoughts and issues of feeling either marginalized as women or experiences, unfortunately, of ecclesiastical abuse, mm-hmm. which I think, or maybe I hope, they're far, you know, few between, but they do happen. Mm-hmm. And the sense that, especially as my daughter and my sons grow older, the amount of male authority over such things as sexual questions mm-hmm. and things of that nature that were going to be asked, and I had to prepare myself for those things to be asked of my children by men and only by men in pretty personal, you know, one-on-one interviews. So you can just see little by little, things began getting more complicated for me as far as this paradigm making sense. And when it really came down to, you know, like I think most of us, as we're thinking through things, we start breaking it down to the simplistic things in life. And what is my testimony about? And what is my belief of the priesthood? And when I really had to think through that, my belief of the priesthood was the power to act in God's behalf. Mm. And if that's what it meant, if that's what it really was, then why are we calling a faction of our church that, I mean, not to be crass, but that has a penis, the priesthood? Mm-hmm. Right. You know, so it started not making sense to me even how we defined it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I got to know more of our history, and it was interesting to me when, you know, Sister Julie Beck told us all to get know more of our history, because at that point I knew that our history as Mormon women came from a place where actually we did participate in things that I think today we would be uncomfortable participating in, such as the laying on of hands for healing. Mm-hmm. We no longer really participate in the Relief Society kind of being an autonomous force of its own, whereas now it's more of an auxiliary. It's considered an auxiliary of the church.
Right.
And so these things started questioning my thought. And I think that there's been other things as well that have questioned, you know, our relationship with Blacks in the priesthood, statements that were made at a time when people were very sure that that would never change.
Right.
When people really saw that as a doctrine of the Lord. And we've come a long way since that time, and I'm glad we have. That was a necessary step for our church to progress in the way it has. And, you know, and I think that we as members of the church, we have a hard time understanding that relationship with mistakes and having the gospel of Jesus Christ kind of in the same sentence. So that's kind of where I stand with why I started coming to terms with the idea that when we start separating responsibility by gender, lots of people, I think, kind of get lost in that paradigm and either marginalized, or they don't fit the gender stereotype, or there's potential for abuse, or there's just problematic possibilities and things that we've seen that I think are unnecessary. And I would like to hopefully, you know, see that change in the future.
That was a great segue to my last question, but I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Before I get to how you see the future with this, what kind of response have you had? Have you made this public since you posted it? Or is it just kind of been posted and just whoever can see it, sees it? What kind of response have you had in this?
I mean, short story is I've not really had any response. I guess I'll just kind of go forward. And I guess what you're meaning is by leaders or disciplinary type stuff.
Or friends or family that might have seen it, like if they've had a response.
My relationship with my work and with my personal life is one that's difficult to balance, because on the one hand, as a professional, I need to try to keep a blank slate as much as possible, you know, so that if somebody who doesn't agree with me would feel comfortable to come see me and not feel that that would be something that I would push on them, or feel like if they felt differently on me on that somehow that would affect our work. So that's a very difficult thing when you're also trying to be an advocate, which is what I am also trying to be. For a long time, I wasn't comfortable being an advocate because I just wanted to be the blank slate.
Right.
But then when I see so many people harmed by policies that have to do, for example, around gender or LGBT issues, it just became, or even sexuality, that really was kind of what threw me over the edge, actually, was our policies around masturbation was what began my advocacy, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So now I have crossed that line where I understand that as an advocate, I make my positions known, and therefore that may help some people who see me professionally, and that may not help some people who see me professionally. And for that, I guess I'm truly sorry that that's just the way it is. So I post things on my Facebook page that this is kind of what I think, or this is what I'm doing. And most of my friends and family are connected with me at that point, and many of my church family ward members are in that group. Most people know what I kind of stand for. I think that it's interesting that probably the people who were most uncomfortable and probably pushed back the most were people from my prior ward, where I had actually been a Relief Society president. So I can understand that maybe there was something there that was more difficult about that process, about seeing me maybe stand up for something that seems contrary to the respect we want to give church leaders, right? So that, again, there's this mix that's difficult to navigate, because I'm not trying to be disrespectful to church leaders. Right. But at the same time, I do have a need to be an advocate, because that really falls in line with my belief of what it means to be a Latter-day Saint. So, so that was probably the biggest pushback I received.
Sounds like you really went through it and figured there was more benefit to advocating for this than not.
Yeah, I hope so.
You started to lead into this about what you see with ordination of women in the church. Do you want to expand on that just a little bit? What is it that you see for this cause, and what is it, how would it look like for ordination of women to transpire in the church?
Well, I have always really appreciated how ordained women has approached this issue, which is that of respecting our beliefs of continuing revelation. Mm-hmm. And that the request has not been to change it, but to be prayerful and to ask the question, you know, and that we would call upon our leaders to do that type of work with our Heavenly Parents to see where we go from here. So I very much support that idea. As far as my vision of it or what I think might happen, and this is, of course, all speculation, my guess is that, like most change, and this is maybe coming from a systems perspective, which is my profession, is that change occurs slowly, mm-hmm. you know, and we see that already. We see some really, maybe some people wouldn't call them significant, but for me are significant changes. And we had a woman pray in general conference. We've had, you know, photos of the presidency under the photos now of the male leadership and the ensign. We just see some of these things that are small, yet I think somewhat significant. I think there's been some really interesting changes in the young women's manuals talking about priesthood and their relationship with priesthood. So that's very heartening. Mm. Granted, I would love to see the day where there comes that announcement, you know, that just like when Black men were ordained and that was, you know, proclaimed as a revelation of, and see us all share in the responsibility and leadership and administration of this grand church. There's lots to be done, and there's, I think, lots of really important decisions to be made that I think women and men together can work in fabulous ways to get those things accomplished. They already do a lot of that together. But I think what is concerning to me and raising my daughter in the church and also for me as my own person and womanhood is that there will never be a time at this point when there isn't at some level a male presiding over me. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just a concerning relationship to be in with my church as far as patriarchy is concerned. And I think that there's some unfortunate things that come from patriarchy. I think that oftentimes patriarchy intends to protect, and I think that's definitely the case in the Mormon church. And I will say that for a long time when I was bearing children and had children at home and stayed at home for the majority of my week versus working, church was one of the places where I felt supported in that decision. Mm-hmm. And it was very rewarding to have a community that valued motherhood. That, again, I see that as a separate issue than priesthood. Does that make sense? So that was definitely there for me, but that doesn't mean that, you know, that priesthood is something that should be equated to motherhood in that sense.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm talking in circles, but again, for me, it's more about, even some of the logistics, I think, are just dangerous at this point in the legal world that we live in. I feel danger for girls and women who go into a room with a man by themselves. I feel danger for the bishop who's in that meeting with a girl or woman by himself.
Yes.
I don't know that that's a very wise position to be putting either gender in this day and age. I also don't think it's necessarily wise to be speaking about specifically sexual matters individually with teenagers as any adult that's not given very precise permission by their parent.
Yes.
So, you know, these are things that I just think are very traditional and cultural in our kind of Mormon upbringing. We've done this for years, and there were times in the past when those kinds of things were considered appropriate, but I think we've come a long way in understanding correct boundaries around sexual abuse mm-hmm. in our society as a whole. I think some of these things need to change to address those issues. So to me, those are not doctrinal things. Those are, I think, easy policy fixes.
Yes.
That would protect everybody.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I'm not a professional yet, but just working volunteer with the LDS Family Services for a long time, it happens a lot more than we hear about. So those are really good concerns. And Natasha, thank you. And I can see that you also have, it sounds like you have a great vision for your daughter too. She has one for herself, Isabella. And if she were to have the ability to be ordained to the priesthood, is there anything you would look forward to in her life that might be different?
No, sorry. That's a great question. The thing that I look forward to most in my children's life is this understanding that when the word priesthood comes up, that they're not envisioning a group of men, that they're really envisioning a divine power. And I think, unfortunately, the way that we've culturally called this group of men, the priesthood. I think that's an unfortunate, just cultural mistake that happened a while ago.
That's true.
That's just something that will take a little time. But I would like for them to see that as the power of God working through them and for them. And of course, it's so closely tied to the atonement in my eyes, too. So it's just this amazing transformative and reformative power that if they choose to embrace, you know, their religion in the ways that I would hope anyone would embrace religion, which is that of empowerment and enrichment in their life, that would be what the priesthood would bring to mind for them. And that they would be able to support spouses and family members and themselves and those types of roles if they choose to go down that road for themselves.
I think that you have helped me to see it different. You're right. Whenever I have thought of priesthood, I've thought of men in suits. And for the first time, when you keep referring to it being the power of God, I'm really seeing a whole different picture. And it's filled with miracles rather than structure and organizational pictures from a general conference. You know, it's more about the power of God. And I'm seeing a whole different picture in my mind. And I'm going to be ruminating on that. I appreciate you sharing that vision that's helping me to identify it as a beautiful miracle filled with potential rather than just a specific gender. Thank you.
Well, and then even I think that when I use the term God, I think that's my shorthand for the Mormon frame of divinity, which is what you've mentioned before, heavenly parents, right? So heavenly yes. father and mother. And so that's how I come to envision God. When I'm saying God, that's who I'm envisioning as two parents.
Yes.
And these two genders that are coming forth and sharing their joint strengths and assets as a team approach. And, you know, it's interesting, even as we look at genders, when you have a couplehood, regardless of who you are in that kind of marital unity, you bring these assets that the other one sometimes doesn't bring to the picture.
Yes.
And that to me is the beauty of the encircling kind of symbolism of the yin and yang. So that to me is God. You know, when I look at that concept that we have in Mormonism of this Heavenly Mother, which I think is such a wonderful thing that is missing from really, from my perspective, the rest of Christianity, at least.
Right.
It's something that I think we really have not tapped into yet as far as that knowledge that we've been given. And we have lots of great ideas and principles in the church that support, you know, that where much is given, much is expected. Mm-hmm. And right. we're not ready maybe for more information because we haven't even processed the information we've gotten. You know?
So
I'm like, yeah, we have not processed this information about a Heavenly Mother. We've kind of hid her away. We don't know what to do with her. I think maybe polygamy, you know, obviously makes that whole thing complicated. But it is such an amazing, wonderful concept that I think so many of us through this movement have latched onto, this concept of the feminine divine that really embodies the Mormon God, is the male divine and the feminine divine encircled in this great power that they are now bestowing upon us.
Yeah, I agree. I think both of those together make a whole. Well, thank you so much, Natasha. I appreciate you sharing that with us. And if anyone's looking to read your profile, I'll put a link on this post so they can do that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story.
Well, thank you for having us on and for all the work that you and the many others in this movement are putting forth. It's greatly appreciated by many of us.
Our pleasure. Think of all the time ahead. Don't hesitate, contemplate. No, it's not too late.